how long were you held hostage by his sleeplessness?
The worst period, which is covered in the book, is 2 years. And then it went on for another few years, but in a milder form. And at that point, he had stopped a lot of his behaviors, like screaming and playing with his feces and that sort of thing. So he would wake up and he would want to get back into bed, and he would just sort of need some assistance doing that. So but it was still difficult, because he would do that as many as 6 times in a night. So it still continued on in a way. And then all of a sudden, just poof, he decided one night to sleep. That's it.
You must be just like, oh, not a good night.
Yes. Well, and you should see how protective I've become of my sleep. I mean, there's nothing gets between me and sleep. Oh, I'm just like, I've done like a total turnaround. Because the effects of that chronic sleep deprivation are incredible. They're severe. I felt changes in my brain. I felt physically that my brain changed. My thought patterns changed. It was really, really incredible.
Which leads us to Admiral Byrd, oddly enough.
Yes.
So explain how you found out about him and what the connection is.
Yeah, you know, I had never heard about him. I knew about the other polar explorers, Scott, Amundsen, Shackleton, and I was, you know, researching polar explorers is sort of an interest, and I'm sure connected to wanting to seek out, you know, people in those sorts of really tough environments, maybe people who had it worse than me. And then I saw his book, and I didn't know anything about him, and the title of the book, of course, was Alone, and I ordered it, and it's an absolutely phenomenal book, and it's one of my favorites. And so reading about his story, I mean, it's in 1934. He's on his second expedition to Antarctica. And he's got 55 men with him, and he decides to leave them and go 123 miles away and be in this hut implanted in the ice and take meteorological data. And his plan was to do it for 6 months, and he made it for 4. He almost died from carbon monoxide poisoning. His men had to rescue him. It was this incredible sort of polar adventure where he stays put. And it was an incredibly rich and sensory-oriented story. And so I read it and I reread it, and I was just completely enamored of it. And also, the fact that he was in Antarctica when the sun doesn't rise. So he was in this perpetual night. And so I felt sort of an affinity. I mean, there's obvious and plentiful differences between his situation and mine, but there were some correlations, and the amount of isolation was sort of commiserating.
I want to talk about the sort of third string that runs through this, and that's jazz.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How is it, do you think, that it works so well for Gabriel?
I'm still trying to figure that out, and it was a surprise. Gabriel loves music, and he loves music across the board, but he loves children's music. He's 16, he still loves Sesame Street, Blue's Clues, all that, the Wiggles. We have been to many Wiggles concerts, so God bless him that he loves jazz. And it was a surprise to us, seeing his initial reaction to live jazz. The other thing that's kind of surprising about it, Gabriel does not have the auditory sensitivity that many people with autism have. The louder it is, the better.
Wow, complete opposite.
Yes, so we found that when we take him to hear bands that are in small spaces where he can be very close to them, the closer we are, the more immersive the experience is, and that's when you really see these really huge reactions in him. Now he's 16 now, so he's older, he's more mature, his reactions are much cooler. He's kind of a cooler dude, right? So we don't see that level of reaction as much, but it's definitely when we're in small spaces with a nice loud full band, then he really he would really go to town. The first few times that we took Gabriel, one of the things that I liked was that the musicians would sort of register Gabe's presence, and then they would just continue on. Like, it was no big deal. Like,
well, they're cool guys.
Right, they're
Jazz
cool
is
guys.
Cool, let's face it.
That's right. And, you know, it just made so much sense. And it was a place where Gabriel can go and he can connect and we can escape with him. And that's a big deal, and we're accepted.
Subtitle is A Memoir of Survival in the Small Hours. Do you think of yourself as a survivor? And what did you survive, and what came out the other end?
Oh gosh, what a great question. I feel massively changed by it. I was philosophical before, but he's made me more philosophical. He taught me to love jazz. He taught me to find endurance. He taught me about the self, because he has such a well-developed personality, even without language, even with all of his barriers. He has this enormous presence. So he's just taught me an incredible amount, and a lot of it came through that period.
I don't know why this book works as well as it does. It's a tribute to your writing, because there's no good reason why it should succeed, but it does.
Thank you.
The book is Know the Night, A Memoir of Survival in the Small Hours. I've been speaking with the author, Maria Much, and Know the Night is published by Knopf Canada.